RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Ian Smith is an entrepreneur with several ventures in the medical and health and wellness fields, co-owner of Summit Rejuvenation and Recovery CBD, a self-published author, public speaker with well over 100 speaking events in men's coaching, business and entrepreneurship and politics, as a former congressional candidate for New Jersey. Ian is best known for, and we spoke to him about this on RCR a couple of months ago now, for his defiant stand against the COVID lockdowns and the ensuing battle with the state of New Jersey, amassing millions of dollars in fines, facing 5 years in prison. He's through that now and is a resident of Florida and is active in local community and political efforts. We've invited Ian back on RCR to give us his thoughts on the latest development in the Trump campaign, the Kamala Harris, Tim Walz campaign for the Democrats, and with everything heading towards November, where it is all at right now. Ian, welcome back to RCR. Nice to have you again.
Yes, sir. Nice to be back.
Okay, where to start? What a monumental week in U.S. politics with RFK, the aftermath of the Trump assassination attempt. I think had Kamala Harris... No, she hadn't been formally declared the nominee last time we spoke. That's happened. She's chosen her VP pick. Where do you want to start, Ian?
That's a great. That's a great question. We can start with I think what everybody probably knew around the world, but definitely here in America, we knew that Joe Biden wasn't going to run again. That was clear. 3 months ago, as clear as it was 2 years ago. So that's no surprise. You know, it's incredible that right in front of our eyes, we are seeing just an undermining of the democratic system. You know, candidates are supposed to be chosen by the people, not appointed by the party. And they sort of just did what they wanted anyway. And, you know, there's no surprise, but it's just shocking to me that it just happens and it's just sort of accepted. It gets talked about on the news and sort of complained about on social media, but, there's not a whole lot of pushback in terms of, hey, this is not the person we picked from the Democrats.
What has happened, do you think, Ian? Because even recently, as I've been following these stories, there's been talk of Trump is a danger to democracy. Yet these are the very people who seem to have edited out democratic process. How did this happen?
Complacency, I think, on a large scale. I think the size of our federal government here in the United States has ballooned to epic proportions, to the point that so many people just sort of accept it for what it is. There's not a whole lot of pushback that happens, especially post January 6th. You don't see large demonstrations anymore. And, I think it's just it's the fault of the people who are supposed to be safeguarding democracy. And that is the citizens. We don't put the safeguarding of the government in the government's hands. I think that's a critical error that people make. There's nobody to be blamed but ourselves, as much as people don't really like to hear that answer.
Isn't it really obvious that Kamala Harris is a disaster of a candidate, really?
Oh, I mean, it couldn't be more obvious. She was a disaster of a vice presidential candidate. She was a disaster of a vice president. She's a walking disaster. The woman can't really put together a coherent sentence without the cackling and the off-putting nature of her public persona. I don't think it rubs anybody the right way. I can't imagine her being taken seriously on the world stage, let alone by the American people.
Yeah, can you imagine her up against the president of China, premier of China, yeah, or Putin, or anyone like that?
Yeah, say what you will about President Putin, but the man's got an incredibly strong presence, and he's wildly intelligent. You know, you watch an interview of him, he doesn't need pre-recordings and scriptings. He's able to talk about the way his government functions. Again, whatever you think about it, and the way Russian politics happen, he's He's well educated and he commands a strong presence. I can't imagine her sitting across the table from geopolitical not only opponents but allies and being taken seriously. I mean, it's like something out of a bad comedy movie. You know, I don't know if your audience has ever seen it, but there's a movie here in the United States called Idiocracy. And it was a comedy. It was a comedy, but it's very much at this point, a documentary. So anybody who hasn't watched it, if you want to watch the parallels between our modern day government in the West and that movie, you'll laugh, but you might cry a little bit because we're dangerously close to those parameters today.
Though watching media coverage from where you are here at the moment, but I'm seeing poll results, you know, between or showing Harris and Trump, and people are saying neck and neck. Is that true?
Well, you know, we saw in 2016, you know, Hillary was supposed to beat Trump by this, I think it was a margin of like 40 points. It was insanely big what they were forecasting. So we obviously know that polling, and you know, from my own experience running as a congressional candidate, polling can be very, very, very skewed if you want it to. But that doesn't mean that just because polling can be skewed that she's not a real threat, because I think that she is. And I think that she is for a couple of reasons. The Democrats, for one, are incredibly good at using the resources they have. And they do have very, very broad financial resources. And they can fundraise and they can mobilize on the ground using those resources. They mobilize voters. They run emotional campaigns and they target people who vote emotionally. And they've done it for years and they've done it very well. So as much as you can objectively, as I think as somebody with common sense can objectively look at a candidate like Harris and be like, there's no way anybody would ever vote for them. I think we have to remember, you know, the bell curve. If you think about the average of the intelligence of the average person, and then remember that 49% of people are less intelligent than that. They can get the votes if they yeah. want to. And I also think that at the same time, I think the Trump campaign is making devastating mistakes.
Really? Okay. What are they?
Yeah. And you know, I've always been critical of Trump. I enjoyed the years under Trump. I've supported the man. I voted for him. But I think that a lot of times he surrounds himself with the wrong people, and he takes advice from bad people. And that's not easy to filter all that out when you're thrown into the political world, no matter how savvy you are. But I do. I think that J.D. Vance is a terrible pick for vice president. The guy's got no energy, no aura, isn't really well received by independents. He's kind of boring. Not that Tim Walz is much better of a VP pick, to make that clear. I certainly don't think that he's any better, but the guy doesn't really resonate with anybody. Trump needs somebody who's a firebrand right next to him. Because we saw what happens when you have a lame duck like Mike Pence. You know, Mike Pence didn't do much to help Trump out in his 4 years. He didn't do a whole lot to help the campaign out when they ran. But also, I think that the Trump campaign continues to alienate its base. You know, its base is, you know, it was in 2016, it was white Christian Americans. And a lot of those people are maybe not going to vote for Trump, but not nearly as excited for this presidency as he's started to. It feels like a compromise. A lot of the things that he stood firm on, you know, are a compromise. I know that his most recent sort of announcements that he was going to be for women's reproductive health has turned off a lot of really conservative Christians. That's a huge part of his base. He's talking about things like we need more legal immigration. People are already struggling finding jobs. We have enough people who have come in here legally. The last thing I think anybody really wants is until we get a handle on the immigration issue and the migrant issue, is more people in this country. You know, the jobs reports are coming out terrible, you know, month after or quarter after quarter. So, you know, I really think that he's getting away from his message that resonated with the people that really, truly support Trump, the people that supported him when it was wildly unpopular to do so, when you were called a racist just for supporting Trump, when you were called a nationalist and all of these things. So I think they need to really change their gameplay on the ground. I think they need to get more active with voters. The Democrats outpace them in almost every area when it comes to that. Republicans tend to put on a show, and a lot of it doesn't translate to voting. They do a lot of work on social media. And, you know, we just had the primary elections here in Florida. We had a 20% turnout. 20% turnout in the primaries. And that's, you know, sort of how we select our candidates who are going to go in the general election. And, you know, if he's not electrifying the base this early out, I mean, I just hope that he can get people to come out for a presidential election, because the primary election may not feel as important, but it is important for people to get involved at their local level. And you do not see that with right-wing voters in this country. And it's very, very unfortunate, because we lose ground at the local level with school boards and all of these things and you know, county commissioners and stuff like that. Even if Trump gets in, these people wind up standing in his way because we haven't put the right people in place to support him.
Speaking of the religious right, I've seen Donald Trump say on a few occasions now in interviews and comments that, you know, his survival at Butler was some kind of divine intervention. That must resonate with, well, Christians, but the Christian right, surely big time, has it?
I mean, there are people who are going to support Trump forever, because they look at him with that much esteem, that he is somebody who has saved the country or can save the country. So yeah, it absolutely does. But then when you turn around a couple weeks later and you say that you would veto a federal abortion ban, you know, if it got to your desk, he's alienating those people. And that doesn't have anything to do with whether or not I agree with that. But these are the people that show up for Trump, is that religious right. And their belief is that abortion is bad. And if they had the opportunity to put a ban on it, that's something they would want. So again, he's looking to compromise. And I understand that in the world of politics, but your voters don't understand that. Your voters, what they want to hear is that you're going to do, you know, the things that they voted you in 2016 to do, not what you plan to do now, 8 years later, this sort of softer version of it. And it has gotten a lot softer. And there's certain issues, like the abortion one is for some people, the immigration one is something that strikes a tone with other people. But again, his base of voters has always been white Americans. And there's a lot of them now who are on the right. And they may, you know, that doesn't mean that they won't turn out and vote, but these people are not nearly as excited about 2024 Trump as they are 2016 Trump.
Okay, so within this week, we've seen RFK Jr. join the Trump campaign. He hasn't suspended his campaign per se, as we understand it here, but in certain states, swing states particularly, he is. And on the numbers, it looks like those swings, if they go to Trump, you know, slam dunk. I'm wondering what you think of these developments. And also going back to what you said before, for a VP pick, RFK Jr. would have been the real choice, really, if you really wanted to go all the way, or maybe not. I don't know.
I think I have mixed feelings about RFK. One thing I really do appreciate, although I don't agree with a lot of his policy, I don't agree with his stance on our Second Amendment gun rights, you know, some other stuff as well. But one thing I do appreciate about RFK is he's an intelligent man. He is willing to discuss in a productive manner. He's not a guy that slings a lot of mud. He's more focused on the issues at hand, and policy especially. So I do like that. I like that bringing him in is definitely unifies maybe not all of the left and the right, but a lot of like the center left and the independent voters. So I think that was, I mean, it, to have him drop out and endorse Trump, I think really, really helped the Trump campaign. However, to answer your question about a vice president, I think his voters would have mixed feelings about that. I don't know if it would be a net negative or a net positive. I think it's a great idea, at least in theory, to have this sort of unified coalition and not just one side or the other. And I think that RFK could probably lend some valuable advice, you know, from a different perspective other than the right. But again, there's a lot of voters who they don't want to compromise with the left. They don't see RFK as one of them. But I do think overall RFK would have probably been a better choice than J.D. Vance. Okay. The man is far more, I think, qualified is a good word. He's been around a long time. He's accomplished a lot. There's not a whole lot that you can rattle off for J.D. Vance that are amazing accomplishments like you can for somebody like RFK. And I think that speaks a lot, because we do need a country that's run like a business and that produces the results that we need as people to kind of get back on track.
Just give me a moment. I want to read out maybe all of this tweet from Whitney Webb. Okay. Given all the hype about the RFK Jr. team teaming up with Trump and what it means for healthcare, I have some questions. I want to get your comments on this. Many funders of Trump, such as Joe Lonsdale and Elon Musk, as well as J.D. Vance himself, have major investment in biotechnology, gene therapies, and companies deeply invested in mRNA and DNA vaccine technology. Trump stands by Operation Warp Speed, which produced mRNA vaccines of dubious efficacy and safety, some of which were made with the help of companies tied to Lonsdale's VC, among others. Will RFK Jr. be opposing the use of these technologies as he seeks to tackle the chronic disease epidemic in the U.S. in a future Trump administration? Will he allow health DARPA, Alpha H, to continue to operate? Will he allow the Peter Thiel and Joe Lonsdale co-founded Palantir to continue to collect and analyze Americans' health data and genetic data with no meaningful oversight into how they use that data, and if they share it with other government agencies they contract for, like the CIA? I agree, says Whitney Webb, that there is a major healthcare crisis in the U.S., but identifying the problem is one thing. Will these experimental technologies be used or promoted as part of the solution? Yeah, those are fair enough questions, aren't they?
I think that's an excellent tweet, and those are very important questions that you will not hear them discuss. You know, one of my biggest issues with Trump is that he will not walk back his stance on the vaccines, and he still thinks that Operation Warp Speed was a good thing, and You don't have to be a genius or a molecular biologist or anybody to know that the vaccine was not effective. And in a lot of cases, it caused much more harm than good. And it was rolled out in a way that I think is entirely unethical, you know, with between the help that big corporations gave government and all of the organizations of government in this country and others came together to force people into not having a choice or to having a very hard choice. So I would love RFK Jr. to do those things. He has spoken a lot about it on his campaign trail, but I don't foresee him having a meaningful impact in an administration that is filled with people who are, like you listed, who are not only sympathetic to these technologies, but they're heavily invested in them.
Yeah.
You know, it's a major conflict of interest that I think, if you ask me, and I just don't think that they would listen to RFK and that he would have enough sway to persuade these people to abandon, you know, these things that they have deep, deep financial interests in.
Kim.com put out a tweet just a day or two ago, and he went through the list of all these things that have happened, you know, assassination attempt and a whole list, and basically saying deep state had failed at all of them. So expect the worst, he said, expect the worst. Now, I don't know how well dialed in he is. Seems to be pretty well dialed in. Are you expecting the worst, Ian?
You know, I've gotten used to doing that. You know, I think COVID caught myself and many people very, very off guard. We were all, and I said this in the last episode, we were all kind of enjoying life in 2016, 17, 18. You know, things were good. And then all of a sudden we got this big rug pull, and it made people painfully aware of the power structure behind government and you know, what we've now termed the deep state and all of this. So I think you're a fool to not at least consider that that more craziness could happen. And I think that it's wise to at least prepare yourself mentally, you know, physically, financially for bad things to happen. You know, we saw with the death of, you know, one man, which we later learned, you know, was under the influence of drugs and died because of a drug overdose. We saw cities in this country burn for months. So those people are out there. They have the funding. They have the organization. They have the capacity to do it. So, you know, if Trump gets in, I would expect there be some noise on the left. How much? I don't know. But I would also, if Kamala gets in, I would pretty much expect the same. You know, so that's a scary thought, but it is one that I think Americans do have to consider, because this, and I hate saying this because it's said every election, but this is definitely the most important election of our lifetime. People in this country are definitely hurting. We've seen a massive decline, and people are very, very emotional about it. They want their lives back. They want their livelihood back. They want the America that they knew back. And then there's a whole nother group of people who want to fundamentally change America. And they are just as invested in that as the other side. So you will probably see, you know, some sort of chaos. How much? I can only hope for the best, and you know, hope that common sense prevails. And, you know, I think something, a likely scenario is Trump gets in and you'll see some unrest, and hopefully we'll see a return to law and order, you know, law and order that we haven't seen in quite a while in this country.
Right.
You know, we have protests that go on that are allowed to, and we have protests that go on where people wind up in federal prison and hunted down by the FBI for, you know, for essentially waving flags outside of a government building. So I would say, yes, expect chaos and, you know, the old cliche, expect the worst and hope for the best.
Yeah. So the real danger period is what, between the election and the inauguration? Is that the time, do you think?
I would say leading up to, we'll probably just see more emotion, the divide sort of deepening. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see more just, you know, chaos. I don't know about another assassination attempt, but things like that. And then after the election, whatever the results are, I would expect one side to be very, very unhappy with it. So the chaos would probably begin, and hopefully it gets contained before the elect or before the inauguration. But if it doesn't, we'll see what the new president is willing to do to restore that law and order in a way that respects people's God-given right to protest and speak their mind as well. You know, because protests aren't the issue. It's when one side is allowed to protest and essentially burn cities down with impunity, and the other, you know, gets arrested for holding signs outside of, you know, abortion clinics.
Yeah, just a quick last question, Ian, and thanks for giving us your time again. So you're in Florida. So if it all kicks off, as they say in the UK, if it all kicks off, are you buffered in a place like Florida? In fact, is that where you're going to see people really make a decision on where they're going to live geographically in the country? You'll get people moving to the state that you're in, Florida, which is known. I mean, we've talked about it before. Will you feel buffered where you are? And I guess if you're on the other side, you'd go to a state that you'll feel safe in. Do you think you'll start to see it's like a fragmentation taking place of people going to places they feel safer in?
You are already seeing that in this country. You know, states like New York and California and Michigan and New Jersey are very, very left-leaning in their state and local government. And they are some of the most exited states. I think that's the top four. And then you have, you know, your red states, your right-leaning states, Texas, places in the South, Florida being another one where you've seen an explosion in population growth. So I think you will continue to see that. And it's that could lead to a very interesting scenario where it deepens the divide in these red states and blue states, because it's always been red, blue, you know, but it's close. You know, it might be 5-10 point difference, but you could wind up with places that wind up with massive gaps And you definitely already see that in a lot of the cities. You know, a lot of the cities are deeply, deeply left, and you don't see a whole lot of conservatives there. They flee the cities and they move to places like Florida. You know, so I'm pretty buffered. I chose this place to move to for that reason. It's pretty rural. There's not a whole lot of urban areas around. So if something were to go wrong, we would kind of be in our own area here. And everybody from this area sort of holds the same views, you know, more or less. And that's an attractive thing these days. So you'll definitely continue to see it. That's for sure.
And very last question, just you personally, how's business? Everything okay for you?
Business is great. You know, I'm involved in several different ventures. I own a national medical clinic that does telehealth medicine. And we work in an area where people need help, and we're a little bit outside of the medical establishment. So we've done really well. We're growing every month. I'm also in the cannabis industry. Same thing. We work with cannabis as medicine through CBD. And again, we're providing alternatives to healthcare in a market that has become very, very skeptical of Western medicine as a whole. So those things are doing well. And I'm also involved in a local company here. We build fences, and everybody needs a fence in Florida, and people are moving here. So it's I can't complain about business. Politics, I can't complain about. Business, I have not a complaint in the world.
Ian Smith, great to talk to you again after our last chat, or about a month and a half, 2 months ago now, that the time sort of slips away. Fitness and political influencer and storyteller too, I would say, because you tell it so well.
Thank you.
Good luck to you. I'm sure we'll chat again. It could be an October surprise. Who knows? We could get back in touch. But for now, thanks for giving us your time again, Ian, and all the best.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a great day.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.